2 minutes later, the phone rang. An old-fashioned instrument, the slow peal of a mechanical bell, a low, sonorous sound, doleful and not at all urgent. The doctor's wife jumped up and ran out to the hallway to answer. She said hello, but nothing more. She just listened. The phone tray again. The others heard the thin, distorted crackle of a loud, panicked voice from the earpiece, and they sensed a gasping shuffle out there in the hallway. Some kind of surprising news. Dorothy Coe fidgeted in her chair. The doctor got to his feet. Reacher watched the window. The road stayed dark. The doctor's wife came back in, more puzzled than worried, more amazed than frightened. She said,
"Mr. Vincent just saw the Italians shoot the men from the red car with a gun. They're dead, both of them. Then they set the car on fire right outside his window in the motel lot."
Nobody spoke until Reacher said, "Well, that changes things a little."
"How?"
"I thought maybe we had 6 guys working for the same organization with some kind of a two-way relationship, them and the Duncans. But we don't. They're 3 pairs, 3 separate organizations, plus the Duncans make 4, which makes it a food chain. The Duncans owe somebody something, and that somebody owes somebody else, and so on all the way up the line. They're all invested, and they're all here to safeguard their investment. And as long as they're all here, they're all trying to cut each other out. They're all trying to shorten the chain."
"So we're caught in the middle of a gang war?"
"Look on the bright side. 6 guys showed up this afternoon, and now there are only 3 of them left. 50% attrition, that works for me." The doctor said,
"We should call the police."
His wife said,
"No, the police are 60 miles away, and the Cornhuskers are right here, right now. That's what we need to worry about tonight. We need to know what they're doing."
Reacher asked, "How do they normally communicate?"
"Cell phone."
"I've got one," Reacher said, "in the truck I took. Maybe we could listen in. Then we'd know for sure what they're doing." The doctor undid the locks and unlatched the chain, and they all crowded out to the driveway. Reacher opened the Yukon's passenger door and rooted around in the footwell and came out with the cell phone, slim and black, like a candy bar. He stood in the angle of the door and flipped it open and said, "They'll use conference calls, right? This thing will ring, and all 5 of them will be on?"
"More likely vibrate, not ring," the doctor said. "Check the settings on the call register and the address book. You should be able to find an access number."
"You check," Reacher said. "I'm not familiar with cell phones." He tracked around the back of the truck and handed the phone to the doctor. Then he looked to his left and saw light in the mist to the east, a high, hemispherical glow, trembling, bouncing, weakening and strengthening and weakening, very white, almost blue. A car, coming west toward them, pretty fast. It was about 1/2 mile away. Just like before, the misty glow resolved itself to a fierce source low down above the surface of the road, then to twin fierce sources, spaced just feet apart, oval in shape, low to the ground, blue-white and intense. And just like before, the ovals kept on coming, getting closer, flickering and jittering because of firm suspension and fast steering. They looked small at first, because of the distance, and they stayed small because they were small, because the car was a Mazda Miata, low and tiny and red. Reacher recognized it about 200 feet out. Eleanor Duncan. The sisterhood, clustering together. 100 feet out, the Mazda slowed a little. Its top was up this time, like a tight little hat. Cold weather, no further need for instant identification, no more sentries to distract. 50 feet out, it braked hard, ready for the turn-in, and red light flared in the mist behind it. 20 feet out, it swung wide and started to turn. 10 feet out, Reacher remembered 3 things. First, Eleanor Duncan was not on the phone tree. Second, his gun was in his coat. Third, his coat was in the kitchen. The Mazda swung in fast and crunched over the gravel and jammed to a stop right behind Dorothy Coe's pickup. The door opened wide, and Seth Duncan unfolded his lanky frame and stepped out. He was holding a shotgun. Chapter 41. Seth Duncan had a huge aluminum splint on his face, like a dull metal patch taped to a large piece of rotten fruit. All kinds of sick, moonlit colors were spreading out from under it, yellows and browns and purples. He was wearing dark pants and a dark sweater with a new parka over it. The shotgun in his hands was an old Remington 870 pump, probably a 12-gauge, probably a 20-inch barrel. A walnut stock, a 7-round tubular magazine, altogether a fine all-purpose weapon, well-proven, more than 4 million built and sold, used by the Navy for shipboard security, used by the Marines for close-quarters combat, used by the Army for heavy short-range firepower, used by civilians for hunting, used by cops as a riot gun, used by cranky homeowners as a get-off-my-lawn deterrent. Nobody moved. Reacher watched carefully and saw that Seth Duncan was holding the Remington pretty steady. His finger was on the trigger. He was aiming it from the hip, straight back at Reacher, which meant he was aiming it at Dorothy Coe and the doctor and his wife, too, because buckshot spreads a little, and all four of them were clustered tight together on the driveway, 10 feet from the doctor's front door. All kinds of collateral damage just waiting to happen. Nobody spoke. The Mazda idled. Its door was still open. Seth Duncan started to move up the driveway. He raised the Remington stock to his shoulder and closed one eye and squinted along the barrel and walked forward, slow and steady, a useless maneuver on rough terrain, but feasible on smooth gravel. The Remington stayed dead on target. He stopped 30 feet away. He said, "All of you sit down, right where you are, cross-legged on the ground." Nobody moved. Reacher asked, "Is that thing loaded?" Duncan said, "You bet your ass it is. Take care it doesn't go off by accident." "It won't," Duncan said, all nasal and inarticulate because of his injury and because his cheek was pressed hard against the Remington's walnut stock. Nobody moved. Reacher watched and thought. Behind him, he heard the doctor stir and heard him ask, "Can we talk?" Duncan said, "Sit down." The doctor said, "We should discuss this. Like reasonable people. Sit down." "No. Tell us what you want." A brave try, but in Reacher's estimation, the wrong tactic. The doctor thought there was something to be gained by spinning things out, by using up the clock. Reacher thought the exact opposite was true. He thought there was no time to waste, none at all, he said. "It's cold." Duncan said, "So?" "Too cold to sit down outside, too cold to stand up outside. Let's go inside."
"I want you outside."
"Why?"
"Because I do."